Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
Now, one band at a time. We talk about that all the time, and sometimes we say, well, no, now we're doing a year, or now we're doing a musical genre. This is an interesting one because it's technically a band, but not a band in the sense of, here's a bunch of people who play music together. This is a band of guys. Like, this is a band of performers.
Like that, Robin Hood and his Mary.
Right, kind of, yeah. Or or the Avengers. If you could call the Avengers a band, it would be the same kind of band that these guys are.
Hulk plays drums.
What's that?
Hulk plays drums.
Well, of course. Yeah, I mean, he breaks every other instrument that he plays. He smashes the drums. Let's clarify. He doesn't just play the drums. He smashes the drums. I'm talking about the Rat Pack. Now, this is interesting.
Stephen Piercy, Bobby Blotzer, Robin Crosby, Warren DeMartini. That's who we're talking about, right?
Yeah, the members of Rat. That's the RATT pack. Nice try. Nice try sneaking that one by me, by the way. Like, I wouldn't know those names.
So the show notes make a whole lot more sense now.
That's right. Exactly. No, the Rat Pack, this is the group that, the group of performers, including folks like Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop. And we're going to mention a bunch of people that are part of this. It's funny because when I was first talking about this, I was assuming Joel Grey was a member of the Rat Pack, but I guess
wouldn't he be really young? From
I don't know,
like Community.
I thought
Joel Grey. Oh, that's Joel McHale.
Jeez, Louise. Was that? Or is this going to be a thing?
No, I'm done now.
All right. Jeez. I didn't know where you were going with that.
No, I'm done now.
Let's talk about the term, the phrase, the Rat Pack, because what's funny about this is that it's evolved so much over the years in other groups who've kind of taken on parodies of that name. But the original term, Rat Pack, was first used in the 1950s by Lauren Bacall in reference to a group that her husband, Humphrey Bogart, would hang out with. The name comes from the Holmby Hills Rat Pack, which was a reference to the home of Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, their place was called Holmby Hills.
Holmby. Well, no, I keep wanting to put an L.
Holmby. Yeah, Holmby Hills.
They should have put an L. Second L would have made that thing a lot better.
If you're Bogart and Bacall, you could call anything you want. And
yeah, we're going to leave out a second L, sweetheart. Anyway, the original members of that Rat Pack were Frank Sinatra, who was listed as the Packmaster.
So this is the thing that when I was doing the research, they all had these weird names. It was like some kind of 10-year-old clubhouse.
Right, like the Skull and Crossbones and stuff,
it was
right?
Like the Goonies almost with, hotter people.
Chunk. Right. Hey, I don't know that Corey Feldman, mouth. Anyway, Frank Sinatra was pack master. Judy Garland was the first vice president. Lauren Bacall was den mother. Sid Luft was cage master. Humphrey Bogart was the rat in charge of public relations. Swifty Lazar is treasurer. Nathaniel Benchley, the historian. David Niven, Catherine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, George Cukor, Cary Grant, Rex Harrison, and Jimmy Van Heusen. I mean, you look through that list, and it's like the biggest stars. It would be like George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Jennifer Lawrence, Charlize Theron, all having like a
movie called Ocean's 11 they do together.
Well, almost, right? Yeah. Okay, there's a couple of them, but still, I mean, these were all A-listers.
No, and also, if they did, what was kind of scary, and I don't know if they exercised any of this power at all, but if any of this group of people decided to kind of team up against big Hollywood at the time, I'm sure Hollywood feared this group of people because they were all their big stars at the time. And if one or all of them decided to say, no, we're not working for MGM, that would have killed MGM.
Totally would have.
I don't know if they ever thought about that or did it or if there was any kind of power play like that. But nowadays, if a group like that got together, you know darn well there would be.
Yeah, right. That would be it seems like that would be the only purpose. I mean, what was the reason that these people got together? Like, just having probably
booze.
Probably. Right. I'm sure they get together at, you know, you see those Hollywood party shots, those photographs, black and white photos all the time of those famous Hollywood parties. And you just don't see, you see that now as a press junket for one of their movie releases or mm-hmm. for a fundraiser or something like that. But this was just like, hey, Frankie, why don't you come down to the pool house and we'll,
yeah, no, and we'll,
sip,
also,
some, we'll sip some martinis and look at Judy Garland.
Well, I also think, too, that times have changed, that the paparazzi culture has made it so they can't just go out and hang out with their friends.
Yeah, right.
So either they do it in these enclave mansions with high walls and they don't tell anybody, so we don't know if they're friends.
Right.
Or if they are out and about with their friends, it's usually for an event. And then it's for like, event, look who's hanging out with Brad Pitt.
Exactly.
Today.
And then Us Magazine and TMZ and all those places capture it all. So it mentioned all those other, those first names, visiting members. So they had visiting members who would pop in from time to time. Errol Flynn, Ava Gardner, Nat King Cole, Robert Mitchum, Elizabeth Taylor, Janet Leigh, Tony Curtis, Mickey Rooney, Lena Horne, Jerry Lewis, and Cesar Romero, the Joker.
Did you watch that Netflix documentary, Sinatra, To Be Frank, or whatever it's called?
No,
it's
no.
really good.
Really? It's on Netflix, you
yeah.
say?
Yeah, I watched it on the elliptical this week. It's really good. I highly recommend it.
Oh, you don't have a TV?
I do, but I usually, someone's watching something else on the TV.
I'm kidding. Eye. I was saying you watch it on the elliptical, like, you, like you're.
Oh, okay. right.
Okay. Yeah, see? Oh, you can't take it now.
Oh, no.
You can dish it out.
It reminds me, there's a joke that my grandfather used to tell, and it doesn't work nowadays because TVs have changed, but he used to say that there's nothing wrong with sex on television as long as you don't fall off.
Yeah, doesn't quite work with flat panel screens. Like they're, 4 inches thick. That's hilarious. All right. So in the 50s, the Rat Pack didn't contain Sammy Davis Jr. or Dean Martin. You'll notice I didn't mention either of those names. Now, Sinatra was born in 1915. He's considered the first rock star because he emerged as young females were earning money during the war and expressing their own individual styles and freedoms. He's listed as one of the best-selling artists of all time, and he's sold more than 150 million units. The Rat Pack themselves appealed to the Bobby Soxers, and the 1960s version of the Rat Pack included Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lawford, and Joey Bishop. The Rat Pack mascots
let's be as condescending as possible.
Oh, well, they could have said groupies.
Yeah, they could have, but still, it's.
Mascots definitely still sets them as like a, not ready for prime time.
I do like that Buddy Greco's in that list.
Yeah, right. Everybody. So it's Marilyn Monroe, Angie Dickinson, Juliet Prowse, Shirley MacLaine, and Buddy Greco. The post-Humphrey Bogart version never referred to themselves as the Rat Pack. They called themselves the Summit or the Clan, but outsiders called them the Rat Pack, and it's been the term that stayed with them. There's that very famous picture of the five of them walking in front of the Sands Hotel Casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
So that brings me to a point that every time a group of guys get together in Vegas or for cards or for drinks, they all think they're the Rat Pack.
Well, not every time. But I don't. I never think of that.
But yeah, but yes. You're... But
yes, totally.
I mean, we could do Rat Packs for any group of guys that we know that hang out together. I mean, let's do the Frog Pants Rat Pack. Let's do the... I mean...
Yeah, right.
It's such a common thing that it's now become a... We have different versions of it throughout pop culture history now because it's turned into such a thing.
Well, totally. I mean, now we've got the Frat Pack. We've got the Brat Pack. Like the Brat Pack was the first one. It was like the whole John Hughes clan of like Emilio Estevez and Ali Sheedy, Rob Lowe, that whole group, the St. Elmo's Fire / John Hughes crowd. Because he had Andrew McCarthy in there as well. And he was I mean, basically you could say everyone who was in either the Breakfast Club or St. Elmo's Fire. A member of, and Judd Nelson kind of gets, and Emilio Estevez get double duty because they were in both.
Yep. And yeah, it's quite a phenomenon how that phrase has mutated and fit and can be assumed by lots of different groups.
Yes, right. I don't think it's one you can give yourself, though. I don't think it's a term you can, you know, you can't call yourself the Rat Pack, Brat Pack, Frat Pack, whatever. You have to be called that, or else it's like giving yourself a nickname, and it's not looked
you're
upon.
You're Deion Sandersing the whole thing by calling yourself Primetime.
Right. Yes. You're George Costanzaing and calling yourself T-Bone when really you're Coco the Monkey. Let's see. When one member was scheduled for a show somewhere, the other members would be there and they'd actually do impromptu shows, which added excitement and sold out shows. It's like a, I don't know, like again, kind of the Saturday Night Live comparison where you get, Alec Baldwin popping up on Saturday Night Live or Steve Martin popping up on Saturday Night Live when he's not the quote unquote scheduled performer. It's like, oh no, I'm in town. Let me pop in and do a little cameo deal.
Yeah. And it's kind of, there are a few musicians where you kind of think this might happen on occasion. Like when the Seattle scene was going really big and strong, you know, Pearl Jam would be doing a show, then out walks, you know, members of Alice in Chains.
Sure. Or Chris Cornell or, you know, right. I think that's going to be common when you've got the regional groups, when you've got the groups that are touring together. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to these festivals and that happens all the time where somebody from another band will just hop up on stage and play guitar during one of the other band's songs. I feel like it's a little bit more planned and contrived than it probably was when the Rat Pack was doing it.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure it is. Now it's, hey, let's do a publicity stunt. This
exactly.
will get you and me on the front page of Rolling Stone.
Because it was almost like a we don't give a crap kind of thing, right? It was like a, you know, we know the audience is going to love it, but Joey Bishop's up there, he's singing. What do you say you and me go up there and do a quick song with him, Dean, and shooby-dooby-doo.
Well, that kind of brings me to the idea that this Rat Pack was really a super group because it wasn't just a group of guys who all had fame that got together. It was a group of guys who brought their own successes into this group and their own talents. I mean, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, they kind of are known for being double, triple threats. They could sing, they could dance, they could act, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Sammy Dangerous Jr. is primarily a singer. And he brought that.
And a dancer.
And then Joey Bishop was mostly a TV guy and comedian. And they kind of brought their skills together and brought people with them to form this group. It wasn't this studio contrived, let's get a singer, let's get an actor, let's get... It wasn't planned. This happened organically, and it happened because I think they got along for the most part.
For sure. They look like they're friends. You see that photo of them walking in front of the Sands Theater and or the Sands Casino, and they look like they're, you know, on their way to go grab a bite, you know, at the Peppermill or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The shows, you know, these group shows were important to the venues because they'd invariably bring in high rollers, the wealthy, the famous, the whales, et cetera. And and they actually would start customizing the marquees at the fronts of the hotel casinos to say, Dean Martin performing, maybe Frank, maybe Sammy, possibly showing up.
My favorite thing I saw while I was doing research is I was looking at pictures, and Caesar's Palace in the 70s, not that long ago, was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Now it's middle of the strip.
It totally is. Yeah, those old photos. And it's funny, I found a video. I need to put this online somewhere, but I found a video that my grandmother and my uncle had taken probably right around 1983. So not even, I mean, not that old, especially compared to like the 60s and the Rat Pack. But driving down the strip even then, it's like you had the occasional massive hotel. You had the Aladdin, you had the Sands, you had Caesars. MGM back then was where the Las Vegas... It's
Bally's now, right?
Hilton, or I'm sorry, not, yeah, Bally's, right? Yeah. It was the old MGM before the fire. And it's and then between them, you've got like Sinclair Station and a Travel Lodge hotel. Mm-hmm. And and it's funny to think, you know, how much the city, that strip, that street has become... Massive casino right next to massive casino right next to massive casino for like 8 miles or whatever.
And then you have like somehow the random CVS crammed in there with casino lights on it.
Right. Or the McDonald's with, yeah. Right, exactly. With the ginormous display of showgirls eating hamburgers.
Yeah.
Peter Lawford was the brother-in-law of JFK, and he would hang out with the Rat Pack at times. The name was then changed to the Jack Pack, you know, John F. Kennedy, Jack being the nickname. The Rat Pack played a large role in JFK's presidential campaign. They appeared at the 1960 Democratic National Convention.
And can you imagine the sway that would have had over a populace of people?
Oh, yeah, totally.
A group totally. Of the largest entertainers in the world at the time showing up and saying, he is a really good guy.
Right. That would be, and again, you'd have something like that. Probably the closest thing, and I guess this is the Frat Pack, isn't it? It's the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly, you know, basically all the Judd Apatow guys, Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that I think they're considered the Frat Pack. And I think if you had them, I don't know. I mean, if you had them show up, I can't see them like appearing at.
I'm sorry. If Will Ferrell showed up for somebody, I probably wouldn't vote for him. I'm sorry.
Not a fan?
No, not a fan.
Oh, no love for the Willster?
No, not really.
Let's take a look here because I did a little quick search on the Frat Pack. Yeah, this is like the whole Judd Apatow group. And you've got Jack Black, Ben Stiller, Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell, Steve Carell. And then you're kind of...
Okay, This is not the same. This is all comedians that have...
Right, none of these are musicians.
Or
well, Jack actors. Black, obviously Jack Black is a musician. But
yeah, but is Tenacious D a serious music project?
I don't know. I mean, they make serious money from it.
Yeah, no, I'm not dismissing Tenacious D as something I enjoy or don't enjoy. I'm saying that, I mean, Spinal Tap started as a joke, turned into something that was an actual band, and they toured as Spinal Tap.
Right.
And I think the same thing might have happened with Tenacious D. They do a funny song, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, crap, people like this. What are we supposed to do now?
Sure. No, it's definitely not the same thing. And you could even argue that the Brat Pack wasn't the same thing because they're pretty much one trick ponies. I mean, Jack Black, well known now for acting and voiceover stuff than he is for Tenacious D outside of, you know, the geek circles and stuff. Mm. You know, you've got in the notes here, I think your great example would be Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. So I actually came up with an idea of a modern Rat Pack. And I didn't know where to start, but Timberlake was my first place to start because he's
absolutely the first place to start.
He is the Frank Sinatra of the group. He's likable. Right. He sings, he dances, he acts, he really kills it. And people seem to really like him. So we start there. Then I went to Keanu Reeves. Now, don't laugh. Hear me out.
Okay.
His movies.
Try not to laugh.
His movies make money. People seem to like him. He plays in a band. He works hard and he seems to be, again, a decent guy. So I think if he and Timberlake aren't friends, I think they could be.
Okay.
Then I threw in Common because he would be a perfect fit with them because he acts, he sings, he's got all the right talents. And then Jimmy Fallon is the Joey Bishop.
I could see that. I would think you'd almost want to add like Ryan Gosling to that list now with the La La Land, the success of La La Land, and at the same time, of course, Emma Stone, same kind of thing. Uh-huh. I would, despite the age difference, I think Kevin Spacey is a go-to for something like this. Yeah. And actually, even Hugh Jackman, right? Because they've done the acting, they've done the comedies, they do the singing, the dancing, all that stuff. What's her face with the big features on her face? Whose name I'm completely blanking on? Devil Wears Prada.
Oh,
Anne Hathaway.
Yes, Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway would be another of the modern ones. I would say all these people that we're mentioning probably could lay claim to being the more modern rat pack. The rattier pack than who we listed as the frat pack or the brat pack, either of those.
But the thing is if they're friends, we don't know because they isolate themselves so much because of the paparazzi culture that even if they are buddies, They're you'd not never know. Gonna. We're not gonna know because sure. they don't want it to influence their friendship and cause problems.
And really, do we need another Rat Pack? Because the stuff you see on the Vegas Strip isn't the same thing anymore. You've got these long term residencies like Celine Dion and Britney Spears and stuff like that.
We could have the Brit Pack and have it be people who perform with her.
The Brit Pack, right? It would be. Would it be – well, you might get Justin Timberlake as part of that one. would you get Christina Aguilera? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
but you don't – you can't visualize all of a sudden Celine Dion hopping up on stage and doing an impromptu duet with Britney Spears.
Oh, I was going to say with Donnie and Marie.
Or Donnie and Marie. Yeah, exactly. Any of these the current landscape of that performance has changed, and so maybe we don't need a Rat Pack because that's – the era of the lounge performance, the lounge style performance in Vegas is only done nostalgically and almost ironically out there now. It's got to be the big lavish, multiple costume changes,
high tech show.
Exactly.
Speaking of lounge, what is the difference to you between big band music and lounge music?
Two drink minimum. I saw that in the notes earlier. We talked about a pre-show. I actually just came up with that answer on the fly.
Very good. That's
not one that I was planning.
My answer was actually going to be a location was the first one.
Yeah. In a lounge versus at a, but I mean, you see those, another great comparison, those old photos of Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. performing, and they've got what appears to be a big band behind them. It's funny. You can just visualize it. It's the group of musicians sitting behind them with the big band instruments, and they're sitting behind what looks like little scalloped seashell.
With the radio station call letters or the casino name down the front.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep, totally. So I don't think it's necessarily the venue. I think you could go to the – back in the day, you could go to the Flamingo Hilton ballroom and see either a big band show or a lounge show. Is it the vocalist?
It could be. My wife actually said tempo. When I asked Stacey, she actually said tempo actually plays a huge part in it.
Yeah.
The reason that she said tempo is because when she thinks big band, she thinks dances and being up and moving and more jump beat kind of stuff. And lounge, the tempo slows because one, you want to hear the music and you want to be able to sit and enjoy it while you're having drinks. And so it's a tempo thing.
Sure.
And after listening to this week, I don't think she's wrong. I don't think I heard too many songs that went above 75 beats per minute. I mean, these songs are slow.
Yeah, but well, you look at old Black Magic. You look at,
but even then, they're maybe pushing 100 beats per minute.
That's true, and they're few or far between. I mean, trying to come up with more than one example right there obviously was trickier for me. So I think you might be right.
Well, Stacey's right. Let's get that on the internet now. Stacey's right.
She's gonna isolate that and make it her ringtone. Great. All right. Where did I leave off with the Jack Pack?
Yeah, the 1960s convention bar.
Right. So it was no secret that Frank Sinatra had ties to the mafia, and JFK worked to separate himself from them after he was elected president. In June of 1965, Sinatra, Dean Martin, Davis, and with Johnny Carson as MC, performed a fundraiser for a halfway house that was fed live to theaters across the country. So your first one of those Regal Entertainment.
Fathom Entertainment presents.
Fathom, that's what it is. Fathom, yes. Fathom events. Holy cow. In 1981, Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin were in Cannonball Run together, and then they were joined by Sinatra in the sequel. It was the last time they would appear together on film, but you also saw Shirley MacLaine in there too, and Jackie Chan for,
And Dom DeLuise.
And Dom DeLuise, for all intents and purposes. In 1987, a large comeback tour was planned for Davis, Sinatra, and Martin. They were all dealing with health issues, substance abuse issues, and even some financial issues at the time. 14,500 people were at the first show of the tour.
And I'm wondering if that also was a thing, too, was the size of venue. defines lounge, because it's a very intimate way of communicating with people, because you're dealing with emotion from the vocalist and even from the musicians. And when you get to something that has 14,000 people in it, that gets lost. It gets further back in the house.
Right. I think the lighting also.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think size of venue, because I think you can, again, with the right crowd, you could pack a ballroom to see a lounge performer or a big band performer. Okay. But the lights will be 50% lower at the lounge performance.
We should make an equation for lounge music.
I think so, right? Yeah.
Tempo plus lighting plus cigarette smoke equals lounge.
Right, exactly. Divided
by sobriety equals lounge.
Right, exactly, yes. 3/4 of the performers on stage need to be soused. Yeah, that's the way it is. After 5 shows, Dean Martin withdrew because of reported health issues, and they continued, though, with Liza Minnelli replacing Dean Martin. There were reports of Sinatra skimming money from the tour and also packing money off, like sending it off in suitcases after shows.
It just seems... I know it's probably criminal and even kind of pathetic, but it just seems comedic when you think about that and the image in your head. Like you're just totally cramming money hurriedly, like Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can in the Southern Mansion.
It's impossible not to visualize it with like the random dollar bill sticking out of the side
exactly.
of the suitcase hastily shoved in there. I totally can see that. Joey Bishop stated that the group was never drunk during these shows. It was all an act. And as far as chasing women, they had to chase them away. I don't doubt the latter, but I do doubt the former.
I'm kind of in the same place. I can't see them being stone sober during shows, but I can also see them not getting to the point where they're not.
I imagine it was played up. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the shots of Dean Martin performing where he's got a drink in his hand.
In the same cup in the same hand.
Yes. Right. In 2001, Christmas with the Rat Pack was released. It was a collection of holiday tunes done by Sinatra, Martin, and Davis.
Wasn't Sammy Davis Jr. Jewish?
Yes, he was.
I know that. I know that Barbara Streisand's released.
Put away your yarmulke. It's time to celebrate Hanukkah. Don't you know?
I know that Barbara Streisand's Jewish, and she's also released a very popular Christmas album. I understand, but.
Yeah,
it is a dichotomy that needs to at least be brought up.
It is. Oh yeah, no, it feels like it's a lot more common when you look at history.
Yes,
right. Like with a lot of Jewish performers who release Christmas albums, because if you release, you just can't, you know, releasing a Hanukkah album again unless you're Adam Sandler.
About a niche market.
It really is. Yeah. The Ultimate Rat Pack Collection was released in 2003, and Live from the Sands was released on CD as well.
Do you have either of these?
I don't have the Ultimate Rat Pack Collection. I'm guessing that's a box set.
It is.
The one I've got, I do have a 3-CD set called Best of the Rat Pack, and it has everything I'd need, I think.
I think that Ultimate Rat Pack Collection might be something I get as a gift for somebody. I know somebody who's a huge Rat Pack fan.
Wow. And you don't think they'd already have it?
Because they don't buy music for themselves very often. And these kind of things are things they don't think about because they have what they have.
Right.
And so these kind of special collection things, they don't go out of the way to find or to purchase for themselves.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Oh, they'd love that.
Yeah.
I actually wouldn't mind, you know, if there's a video out there, I wouldn't mind finding that. I'm going to check out that Sinatra documentary because I'm sure it's got some of that. But I wouldn't mind seeing like a video of Sammy Dean and Frank playing at the Sands or something like that in one of these impromptu shows, because they were more than music. I mean, it was like getting up and doing skits and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
they had bits that they'd rehearsed.
Right. And they, you know, they played up their roles as Dean Martin's probably the boozy womanizer and Frank Sinatra's kind of the crooner womanizer and Sammy Davis Jr.
He always kept an eye on things. So that's the thing about these shows, these shows when they pop up on stage, is the reason people like them is because people felt like they were being let in on a party. They felt like they were... They were being part of something different, something special, and that they wanted you to be part of that party with them.
Sure.
And whether it was scripted every night and it was the same, or if it was different every night, whatever it was, the crowd ate that up, that, oh, look, Dean Martin just wandered on stage behind him and surprised him. And now he's telling jokes with him. And Sammy Davis Jr. just got it from the table behind me. What the heck is this?
Right.
Those kind of moments, whether scripted or not, made people really enjoy that kind of being let behind the curtain a little bit.
Sure. And it, again, you know, same kind of thing would happen if you're at a Sammy Hagar concert and then all of a sudden Eddie Van Halen pops up on stage and joins him for a song or something like that.
Or maybe fight.
Well, yeah. Okay. Maybe Gary Cherone would hop up on stage.
Well, let's not get extreme about it.
Oh, geez. Okay. I caught that one. By the way, not really even a self-promotion thing, but one of the Coverville albums I'm working on is with a bunch of indie Vegas bands to do a New Vegas covering Old Vegas album, where a lot of the songs, a lot of the old Rat Pack songs covered in kind of a new style by these new bands. And really, really excited about it. I was really actually hoping that it would have been out by Christmas of last year, and I'm not even sure it's going to be out by Christmas of this year just because of a couple projects that a couple of them are working on that might keep them tied up. But crossing my fingers I can get it out pretty soon. But you Soundography listeners, keep an eye out. It's happening. There'll be a Kickstarter for that too, I'm sure. Or an Indiegogo or Pledge Music or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about the movies that these guys all appeared in together or in various
forms. Yeah. I was going to list who was in each one, but after about five movies, I'm like, nope, that's not going to happen.
Now, before we go any further though, you know, like I said, Joel Grey never even came up in our discussions, yeah, even in the mascot section. But I could have sworn that Jerry Lewis was considered a member of the Rat Pack.
You know, I didn't see anything. The only reason I think he might have been because he was making movies with Dean Martin at the time and might have wandered around with him at occasion. I don't know. I mean, it just, yeah. I did not see anything in any of the talk.
It is funny. It's
maybe he was a mascot. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like I so vividly, and maybe it's the Mandela effect.
I almost said that. Oh my gosh, I almost said the same thing. But I mean, he made a slew of movies with Dean Martin.
Right.
And they did a lot of appearances together because of those movies. Maybe during some of those appearances, the pack would show up behind them at some of those, hey, maybe Frank and Sammy will show up kind of things.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and that's probably it. I mean, you probably could look at a third of the movies we're going to be mentioning here, and Jerry Lewis appeared in there, or David Niven, or, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check this one out, by the way. Did you know there was a biopic made by HBO in 1998 that had Ray Liotta as Frank Sinatra?
I did see that.
Joe Mantegna.
Yeah, I did hear. I saw the note about it. I haven't seen the film.
I'm going to see if, because you know, HBO makes all their original programming, or most of the original programming, is still available. I'm going to see if. No, it looks like the only Rat Pack you're going to get on HBO now is season 5, episode 2 of The Sopranos.
No. Oh.
Because it's called the title of that episode is The Rat Pack. That's a bummer. I'll have to see. Be curious as to when that's going to be available to watch again, because that'll be really cool. All right, let's get to this list.
Do you want me to just go through and hit highlights, or do you want to just pound the list and you can stop me if there's something notable? How do you want me to do this?
Yeah. You know what? Because we'll stop and talk about that one right there, obviously.
And then probably this one.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right. First one, 1947. It Happened in Brooklyn. 1956, Meet Me in Vegas, which I think was the beginning of a love affair that some of them, maybe all of them, had with Vegas.
Sounds like a movie I need to watch too.
Yeah. Some Came Running, 1958. Never So Few, 1959. Ocean's 11, 1960. And we pause for discussion.
Right, because obviously this one remade more recently with Clooney and Pitt and Scott Kahn and Casey Affleck and Andy Garcia, like, you know, basically a big crowd. Mm-hmm. And it almost felt like these guys were poised to have some sort of Rat Pack themselves.
Mm-hmm.
because it did seem like they were all working together. Steven Soderbergh casting a few of them in different things. But again, you know, you could put that, you could do that list with anybody. You could do it with all the that was also Steven Soderbergh, the black and white version of Much Ado About Nothing that he did with kind of all of his friends. So you had Fillion.
Yeah,
and,
that's the one. Yeah, and that's the other. I mean, there's. I think that you could put this Clark together Gregg. With any group. Like, what's his name? The comedian that does all the Waterboy. What's his name?
Oh, Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler has his gaggle of people that he uses every time.
Kevin James and Rob Schneider and David Spade. Right, that would be another.
Yeah, easily. And then you've got. Like the Joss Whedon crowd that always ends up working together somehow.
That's who I was trying to think of. That's the guy who did the Much Ado About Nothing. Yeah. That wasn't Soderbergh. That was Whedon.
So you've got these groups of people throughout Hollywood that kind of do that, but this was a high powered, very A-listy type of group. And I do feel like they got the vibe of that group right. That kind of jokey, fun, just having a great time making this movie in Vegas kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm. But it still was, you know, they're known for acting. They're not known for anything else. They're not known for pulling together a variety program. And
You don't see him taking over the theater.
The Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
I was going to say, you don't see him taking over the theater at the Flamenco and or the Tropicana and letting loose for an evening.
Right, exactly. Be great. I would pay money to see that. You know, just get Clooney and Pitt and all those guys, Cheadle and everybody on stage. I bet they actually could put together a really great show like that. And
I bet you they eat the variety show up because they all look good in suits.
Right. Here's the thing. If they ever did that, it would be like this little secret business and nobody would know about it except for the people who happened to be there that night and saw it. It would probably be marketed as the Joey Franklin Hour or something like that, so that nobody knew about it except
Radio
for people.
Hour.
And right, except for people in the know.
Yep.
Damn it, it probably already happened. We missed it. All right, back to the movies.
Okay, in 1960, they did Pepe. In 1962, they did Sergeant's Three. In 1962, they also did Road to Hong Kong. And they did Come Blow Your Horn in 63.
That was one of those, by the way, I'm going to interrupt because that is one of those. There was like a whole series of these road movies.
Which is why I think they wanted to do Cannonball Run, because it's a road film.
Right. But those were Crosby and Hope films. Mm-hmm. Again, a couple other guys who I felt like, well, maybe a little bit older, right? Than then Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and that whole group. Yeah, 1940 was the first Road 2 movie. This was actually, Road to Hong Kong was the last Road 2 movie.
End of the road.
Ba-dum-bump. Okay, very good. All right, back to the list. Sorry.
Come Blow Your Horn, 1963. Johnny Cool, 1963. Four for Texas, 1963. Robin and the Seven Hoods in 1964. This is one that I really enjoy. This is what I think might have been the first Rat Pack movie I saw. Mm-hmm. And I think it
is... Do you have all of them in there? Are all of them in there?
I think most of them are. I mean, it's a large batch of them. It's really good. And it made me understand the draw of the Rat Pack. Sure. This is one that I think could be remade very easily, and you'd have to have the right chemistry between the actors to make it work, because it relies all on chemistry and they're playing off each other and working together.
Right. Oh yeah. Here we go. So Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Bing Crosby, with Peter Falk, Barbara Rush, and Edward G. Robinson. Huh. This is cool. Yeah, this, I'd like to see this. I've never seen this one, so this is, I'm adding this to my list to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, it's a fun, good movie.
Cool.
All right, 1965, Marriage on the Rocks. 1966, the Oscar, which I thought they might have named so they maybe would get an Oscar. And the Oscar goes to the Oscar.
The Oscar. Sure. Very good. Well
done. A Man Called Adam in 1966. Texas Across the River in 1966. Salt and Pepper, not the rappers, 1968. One More Time, 1970. A huge gap. And a couple showed up in Cannonball Run. And then three of them were in Cannonball Run 2 in 1984.
Wow. And then that was it.
What is interesting, though, is from 47 to 68, 70.
Yeah.
These group of guys kind of defined style, cool, film, right. Entertainment, music. It all, I mean, they struggled when music started to change, but then they fell back into film, but they still kind of embodied cool.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I mean, aside from substance abuse issues and potential ties to the mob,
those minor ties to the mob.
I mean, you didn't have massive scandals with these guys.
Not really.
I guess we were a little bit more lenient because, I mean, they were referring to ladies as broads and dames in their music anyway. Yeah. So it's not like you had a grab them by that moment. But
who was it that was comparing a girl to cocaine and getting drunk?
Oh, in one of the songs?
Uh-huh, yeah. Who is that? What is that?
Nothing Like a Dame? Is that?
No. I sure get kick out of you.
Oh, I get no kick from, well, that's from champagne, not from cocaine.
Yeah, but basically he's comparing a woman to substances.
Oh, come on. That's a stretch. He's comparing the feeling he gets from a woman to the feeling of being drunk.
That's splitting hairs.
No, I get, okay, all right, yeah. Comments. Email, post your comments in the show notes or on the Facebook post. I'm curious as to how people.
It's no hold her down, but come on.
Gosh, no, but and really, you do have to look at these songs from the 50s and 60s that they were doing, and be like, okay, it was a different time. Again, yes. You know, referring to women as broads and dames. I mean, half of these songs have that, you know, have the term dame and. It was a misogynistic time, but it wasn't a maliciously misogynistic time. I don't think they felt like women were the weaker sex, but they did use them in their songs as sex. Sex objects.
The fairer sex. Yeah, they definitely did that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get. It's, we're not talking Mad Men.
No.
Let's talk about their Stairway to Heaven songs, because I don't think we're going to really have a... Should I pull up a setlist.fm? Do you think we've got... Oh, sure we do. Yeah, of course. We can do one for each of the individual ones.
And that's kind of what... That's kind of how I was kind of going from my stuff.
Sure.
We could do like anything you want. It's your call.
Right. Nope, I'm with you. All right, let's start with... We got to do these individual because there's not really a Stairway group song for any of these guys where all three of them are performing, and really we're narrowing it down to Sinatra, Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay, and so what I did when I thought about my songs was maybe not their Stairway as much as their signature things. Mm-hmm. That when you hear this, you instantly know one, who did it, and two, that it defines kind of who they are.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to disagree with you on your choices, but let's get to each of our choices here. So Sinatra.
People like disagreement. So
I think so too. All right. So Sinatra.
My choice is New York, New York.
I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray.
My choice would be My Way.
My friend, I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway.
I feel like that's the defining. So let's see here. Frank Sinatra, pulling up setlist.fm, artist statistics, performances. The number one song performed in concert by Frank Sinatra is The Lady is a Tramp.
Oh, wow.
In ermine and pearls, won't dish the dirt with the rest of the girls. That's why the lady is a tramp. She likes the free,
fresh wind. Followed by New York, New York. Followed by My Way. Yep. So there you go. A few more performances of New York, New York than My Way. But Ladies of Tramp actually making a little bit of a comeuppance and beating both
the dark horse in the race. Yeah.
Interesting.
That should be that'd be a good racehorse name too. The Ladies of Tramp coming up on fast on the outside.
Around the fence. Come rain or come shine. In fact, I've got the world on a string. I get a kick out of you.
On me. Every Rat Pack Sinatra song could be a horse.
The name of a horse. Sure. Oh, you can Luck Be a Lady.
Yeah, every single one of them.
One for My Baby and one more for the road. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Send in the clowns. All right, let's get to Dean Martin. Your choice?
That's Amore.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's Amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's Amore.
That's a good one. I feel like that's got a 60% chance of being right. I'm going to take the other 40 and I'm going to say, ain't that a kick in the head?
Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is going to be beautiful.
Okay.
All right, Dean Martin. I love the fact that these, is Dean Martin even on this list? Uh-oh. Here we go. Artist statistics, Dean Martin. Okay. Not as many shows listed, but When You're Drinking, Bourbon from Heaven is the first song. Oh, Everybody Loves Somebody. Everybody loves somebody sometimes. That's the number two.
I put that on my list.
Did you really?
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Number five, That's Amore. So there you go. And I am not seeing. Did I just skip over it? Ain't that a kick in the head? I thought I'm just not seeing it. Let's do a quick search here because there's a lot of songs listed, but not a lot of performances. Like, the Ain't That a Kick in the Head is not even listed here. And the first song, When You're Drinking Bourbon from Heaven, is only listed as being played 25 times. So That's Amore 18 times.
Because he passed
times.
Out before all the other times.
There you go. All right. So that one we'll put a little asterisk, but I think you're right. I think That's Amore is the winner there. Sammy Davis Jr.
My pick. You're nobody till somebody loves you.
You may be the king and you may possess the world and its gold, but gold won't bring you any happiness. When you're growing old, the world will be the same.
That's really good. I was thinking the Candyman because he had such a big hit with it. It was a later song for him, but Mr. Bojangles was that wasn't during the Rat Pack.
Yeah, it was post. Wasn't it more like 70s?
Way post. Yeah, way post. Even Candyman, I think, might have been way post.
Well, I was down and out. He looked to me to be the very eyes of age. As he spoke right out.
Here we go. Artist statistics for Sammy Davis Jr. Mr. Bojangles, number one. The Candyman, number two.
Wow. Good call.
No kidding. Well, only, again, the records on this are spotty. 33 performances of Mr. Bojangles and the Candyman each, tied for first place, a three-way tie with What Kind of Fool Am I? Then you've got I've Gotta Be Me. Oh, that's another good one, another good Sammy Davis Jr. one. I've Gotta Be Me. I've Got to Be Me. Theme from New York, New York, number 8 on his list, so also up there. I can't believe this is true, and if this is the case, I need to find this, but it doesn't seem like there would be this intersection. Seventh most performed song by Sammy Davis Jr. on tour, Bad, a cover of the Michael Jackson song. We were talking about...
Mr. Bojangles is the winner.
Mr. That's Bojangles.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Bojangles, well, who win?
Tied with Candyman. But again, that was, you know, that was, again, both of those were 70s, because I think Candyman came out with the, it was introduced in the Willy Wonka
soundtrack. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we've got our Stairway songs, but that's not where we like to end things here on the show. No, we like to create a playlist for you, the listener. And this one's tough because we're both working from a quote unquote greatest hits collection of the Rat Pack. We're working with like a, you know, 100 songs and kind of picking.
Yeah, I had 100 songs of Frank Sinatra and you had 3 discs of Rat Pack.
Right, exactly. So this is coming from a list that kind of is a greatest hits collection. But let's go ahead and get this started. I will begin with my 5 song playlist here. First one for me is the song Sway, performed by Dean Martin.
When marimba rhythms start to play, dance with me, make me sway. Like a lazy ocean hugs the shore, hold me close, sway me more. Like a flower.
This is it's one that's often covered, and Dean Martin certainly isn't the first one to do it. But
what happens after you had 5 drinks?
That's right. After 5 or 6 martini, yeah, right.
Start
anyway.
To sway. Like
such a great song, and again, it almost doesn't matter who's doing the song because it's such a cool melody, such a cool chord progression. I throw out chord progression a lot when I'm doing my playlist, but it is the thing that is, it's the hook for me. It's the thing that provides interest in a song and makes it not sound like anything else. You know,
it's, so there's an American rapper named Sway Calloway. Maybe he needs to do this song.
I think so.
Sway on Sway.
Sway, Sway. Mm-hmm. And now the song Sway by Sway.
Yep.
All right. Next one is, I think, in my collection anyway, the only song that I have that's got all 3 performers on it, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr.
And when I saw this on the list, I thought you were cheating.
No. And I'm not cheating. You know, there's 2 reasons I'm not cheating on this one. Number one, because it does exist. And number two, because it is one of my favorite songs. It's called We Open in Venice. And this is like, if you're going to draw a line between the musical performances of Dean, Frank, and Sammy and the comedy performances of Dean, Frank, and Sammy, like the variety show stuff, this would be right in the middle of that line between the two.
We're folk who give distraction, are we? New theater give attraction, are we?
Oh, shut up, Sam.
But just a crazy group that never ceases to troop around the map of Little Italy. Well, here we go back to the home country again. We open in Venice. We next play for
and it's a fun song because they're rattling off all the places that they're going on tour, and then offering little tidbits about them. And when I do the Coverville Records cover album of this stuff, the way we're doing it is listing off the different venues at the casino hotels on the strip and downtown.
Oh, that's
kind of
fun.
the same way that they do it with like the rags to riches to rags kind of thing. So it's going to be starting off at the bunkhouse and then going to the Cosmo and then to MGM Grand. But it's a fun song. It's a really cool supergroup. It's a really cool Wilburys song, Traveling Wilburys. next one is the Sammy Davis Jr. song that I didn't put on the list, but I think it did show up in the setlist.fm choices as like the third or fourth song down there. But it's The Rhythm of Life, and it's from, oh, you'll know the play. What is it? Sweet Hereafter. What is it? Sweet something?
I don't remember. I know I can see it in my head, but I just can't think
of it. I'm looking it up. Let's see. Rhythm of Life is a thing. Of Life. Sweet Charity.
To feel the powerful beat. To feel the tingle in your fingers. To feel the power in your feet. Daddy, go. Go, go, go.
Daddy spread the gospel in Milwaukee.
Charity, right. Okay.
Sweet Charity Broadway.
It's a story about a stripper.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. Well, it's, I don't know how to translate the song Rhythm of Life into that with that backdrop now, but I'm eager to try. It's a fun song, and it takes an unexpected turn every time you go from a verse to a chorus. It almost sounds like two different songs that were hybrid joined together with spackling paste. And
the other song that came from that was a huge hit was Hey Big Spender.
Oh, really? That's also from Sweet Charity? Okay. I need to see. I need to go back and see some of these old Broadway shows, at least the ones they've converted to film, because I missed out on so much of that stuff.
It's a Neil Simon show.
Oh, is it really?
Well, Neil Simon's in it, but Bob Fosse did a lot of the work on it.
Oh, very cool. Next up in my list is a Dean Martin tune, Memories Are Made of This.
Forget a small moonbeam. Folding lightly with a dream. Your lips and mine. Two sips of wine, man.
And it's the backing vocals that make this one for me, because it's the one girl, one boy, some love, some joy. But it's the backing vocals of sweet, sweet, the memories made of this. Sweet, sweet, the memories are made of this. And it just hooks me in every time. I just love it. And then finally, because I feel remiss if I don't have a Frank Sinatra song on the list. And because you already took Luck Be a Lady, which is my ultimate Vegas walk into a casino, hum this song to myself as I walk in song, and I'm not lying. It's Fly Me to the Moon.
All I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Because obviously it's a great song. It's a classic Frank Sinatra song. It was the melody of Lonnie Anderson's doorbell on WKRP in Cincinnati. A little piece of trivia there, but it's just a cool song. And it's if I'm standing up in front of a group of people doing karaoke night, and the only songs I can pick from are Rat Pack songs, Fly Me to the Moon is the one I'm doing.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Something
information
about
tuck away for a couple weeks.
I did that at Intertacular a few years ago up in the Airy Lounge.
That's right. I wasn't cool enough to be there that time, but
oh, whatever. It was an impromptu thing where Andrew just hopped up on the piano and started playing, and I got up and sang that. It was almost like a Rat Pack situation, Hammond.
Oh my gosh, you're living fantasies.
All right, let's get to your five songs.
All right, so I picked Sammy Davis Jr.'s "The Birth of the Blues" as my first song.
Good choice.
It's a great song. It's Sammy at Sammy's best.
Then from a jail, there came a wail from a downhearted frail, and they played that as a part of the blues. Now from a whip.
And over the course of this last week, I actually developed an appreciation for Sammy that I did not have before. I mean, I appreciated everything he did, but I got a like a real dose of what Sammy brought to the table during this week, and I think he gets undervalued sometimes. So he was. This is a great song.
Yeah.
Then, as you said, I picked "Luckily a Lady" tonight by Frank Sinatra, and this I love because I worked on Guys and Dolls, and Guys and Dolls is one of my favorite shows. A very
unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush, and yet before this evening is over, you might give me.
And what's interesting is when we did it, it was this very upbeat, fast, dancey number. He slows it down to be more like almost like a sultry call for luck being the lady to come see him instead of a kind of a pleading, rapid thing. He's trying to seduce luck, it seems like, in the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then Love and Marriage by Frank Sinatra. I picked it because of its association with all these things that are so wonderful about marriage being set against the backdrop of Married with Children.
You can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage. It's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will say it's elementary.
It's funny how you can't hear that song anymore without without thinking of Married with Children. I mean, it's hand in hand, kind of.
Yeah. Well, and it made me think that if they did a Honeymooners, they might do Fly Me to the Moon as the theme song for the reboot of the Honeymooners. Because of
Right.
The moon, which would never fly in pop culture now because of the
domestic violence. No, to the moon, Alice. Exactly. No, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, would not go well.
I picked The Girl from Ipanema next. It's been done by, I don't know, 100,000 artists. Everyone seems to do a cover of Girl from Ipanema.
The girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, I smile, but she doesn't see.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela menina que vem, que passa num doce balanço.
Yep.
But the reason I like it is because it's one of those go-to punchlines in every elevator in every movie.
As soon as the right bad guys covered with blood hop on an elevator,
being after chased by zombies,
scene. Right?
Every movie uses The Girl from Ipanema as the punchline. If so nothing true. Else,
yeah.
When you watch movies and people get stuck in elevators, you're going to know that it's The Girl from Ipanema.
For sure. Yep. Nope. Totally true.
And then I picked as my last one, Everybody Loves Somebody by Dean Martin, which made his list. And I love this song.
My sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear.
It's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's, you know, it's, I think is, and we kind of saw this in the set list thing, that it's as much a Dean Martin theme as anything else.
Yeah.
For sure. Very cool. Good choices, all of them. Wow. And there we go. That brings us to the end of a warm and wonderful
alcohol-soaked
penultimate for the season episode of Soundography. Yes, that's right. Another season two of – not another season two. This is the only season two, but another season of Soundography about to come to a close with our next episode, which gives Hammond and I a chance to take a couple weeks respite, but also work on our lists for the next one. And if you want to be part of it, go check out patreon.com/soundography, and you can see how you can help contribute to our upcoming list for season three. Like, like our friend Peter Emig, who is sponsoring the very last episode of season two with a band called The Deer Hunter, No relation to the John Voight, Christopher Walken film from the 70s. This is a progressive rock band from Providence, Rhode Island. And again, thanks to Peter and Maggie, sponsored this episode of Soundography. You can sponsor an episode too. You can make us listen. You are forcing us to spend an entire week listening to the catalog of any musical group you want, within reason. And Soundography producers reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
Yeah, we each get one. I think we each get one veto per season. So
we do, yes. And so anyway, check it out if you want to help sponsor the show and suggest a band. This is going to be a very interesting one because not only do I not know any of their music, I've never even heard of the band. So this is completely brand new to me. You've already kind of sampled a few of their songs and you love it.
Well, yeah, I had one of their albums going in.
Oh, did you? Okay. All right.
But
so
I kind of went bonkers as soon as we knew we were doing it. And I now own all the albums.
Wow. How many are there?
There's five, six.
Okay, good.
And then there's a whole collection of EPs too, based on colors, which is really cool.
Oh, right. Okay. I remember looking at that before. Okay, good. Oh yeah, this will be fun. I'm looking forward to it. So
and they are not prog like Dream Theater. They're more prog like, I don't know. There's an element of jazz to them. This is not going to be Dream Theater for you. This is going to be something else.
Oh, thank goodness. Five albums of Dream Theater and a bunch of EPs.
And 2 years later, we had to do the show.
That's right, exactly. So that's coming up next week. That's The Deer Hunter. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to send it to. We read every single email that you send, and we respond when the email warrants a response. You know, if you're just saying, hey, love the show, well, we'll still respond probably with just like a thanks sort of thing. So we respond.
A thumbs up emoji.
Right, exactly. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just go to @TheSoundography to find out what's going on in Soundography Land. And if you want to take a visit to Soundography Land, well, you do that by going to soundography.com. It is where everything Soundography can be found. You can download an archive of shows. You can go back to season one, season two, or whatever. Even our little extra bonus shows that we've done from time to time. Find all that stuff at soundography.com. You'll also find in the show notes for every episode our playlists, a Spotify link to our playlist where you can listen to those again when they're available. You can also find links to buy greatest hits albums, as well as support the show on Patreon. We love your support, and we couldn't do the show without it. So please consider dropping us a buck or two a month if you would be so kind. It definitely helps out the show. Leave your reviews wherever you'd like, iTunes or directly to us via email or whatever. If you like the show, if you don't like the show, let us know about it, and we'd love to hear it. Doesn't mean we're going to change anything.
Yeah, but if we get something right or wrong, please share, because we've said this before. We study this band in a week.
Right.
And sometimes we happen to know more than others, but sometimes we could get all the facts wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So that is going to do it. Again, stick around next week for The Deer Hunter and our big season two finale episode. In the meantime, on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying that's going to do it for today. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.